Ron Van Dam. There's nothing he won't talk about, which seems weird because normally he talks about nothing. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm one of the people that are referred to in the title. Thanks for coming. Sit down, shut up. I'll take it from here. Before I continue with the program today, I'm going to ask you to empty your pockets and walk through the metal detector. Not that I'm trying to find anything, I just enjoy asking people to empty their pockets. Okay. All right, sure. I get it. Thank you very much. Please hold your applause. The applause is deafening. Please, I can't take it anymore. All right, fine. I have an interesting show for you today. Thanks for coming. This means that you're a good person. You know, it's not like if you're good, you're going to go to heaven. If you listen to this show, you'll go to heaven. That's for sure, because you've endured something that most people can't tolerate or even deal with. So you're a special person in that way. Well, you and I have something in common. We all put our pants on in the same way, don't we? Over our heads, right? What? You don't? Oh, okay. I thought everybody did. Look, I'm laughing at myself because that's probably the only way to get through this. Anyway, how are you going to be with him? You know, this show is nothing if it, that's not the end of the sentence. This show is nothing if it doesn't inform you. And I try to make people's lives better, not because I want them to have a better life. It's just I've got nothing else to do. So here's something that I read. Now, you might say, Ron, how do you know that everything you read is real and it's not one of these fake Trump made-up lies? Well, I don't know that. But this rings true because various sources said it was, and also a guy named Bob in Schenectady, New York, told me this. And Bob in Schenectady, New York, is never wrong about anything that I know of. Probably is wrong about a lot, but I'm not familiar with those things. Here it is. Are you ready? Do you like fruit? I was told by my doctor that I should eat more fruits and vegetables because they're good for you. And she even, I have a female doctor, by the way, which is very awkward because when she does the annual physical, she asks me to take all my clothes off, but she keeps hers on. I don't like that at all. That doesn't seem fair somehow. Look, if I'm going to take my clothes off and be examined, then show me how that is a good idea, and you do it too. I'll examine you. I'm not a doctor or anything like that, but I can give it a shot. But it doesn't work like that. So, and my doctor, she didn't actually say eat more vegetables. She said eat more veggies, and I felt like saying, what is a veggie? Are you taking the word vegetable and making it cute? Is that what you're doing? Are you trying to make vegetables sound more attractive by calling them veggies? I refuse to eat vegetables. Veggies? Oh, yeah, that's different. Anyway. Okay, so here it is. When I read this, I realized that something's really wrong. Yeah, so I've been eating more vegetables, and I've been eating more of the fruits. Here you go. Approximately 95% of non-organic strawberries. And by the way, non-organic strawberries, what does that mean? Well, they're strawberries. That I know those. Organic strawberries are strawberries that grow out of the ground. I thought they were all organic. Were they made in labs? No. Non-organic means that they don't touch them as much. Non-organic strawberries are extremely expensive, but I thought they don't have to touch them and do anything to them. That makes them more expensive? I know. Approximately 95% of non-organic strawberries, those are the ones that we eat. Also, leafy greens such as spinach and kale. My doctor said eat more spinach and kale. I mean, spinachy and kale-y. Collard greens and mustard greens. Grapes. Yeah. Peaches and pears. They were all tested by the United States government, and they all contained detectable levels of pesticides. Chemicals sprayed onto the things, that kill the bugs. Yeah, they detected them on the fruit that they just checked. That's according to a 2024 Shopper's Guide to Pesticides in Produce survey. Didn't know that there was one. Nectarines, apples, bell peppers. Those are red peppers and green peppers. I eat those all the time. That's why I have gas. Hot peppers, cherries, blueberries, green beans. Oh, my God. That's everything that I was told was healthy for me. They all rounded out the list of the 12 most contaminated samples of produce. I've been eating things that have pesticides on them, detectable amounts. When I eat them, where do they go? Into my body. They are dubbed the Dirty Dozen. I saw that movie. By the Environmental Working Group, or EWG, of course, if you don't have time to say that. That's an environmental and health advocacy organization that has produced the annual report since 2004. Oh, my God. Is that a long time ago? I'm not even sure. Depends on how old you are. If you're my age, 2004 wasn't all that long ago. If you were born in 2003, that was a long time ago. It's funny how that works, isn't it? Seriously, this is real. Pesticides have been linked in studies to preterm births, that's being born before you were even conceived, congenital malformations, such as neural tube defects, spontaneous abortions, and an increase in genetic damage in humans. Oh, man. Exposure to pesticides has also been associated with lower sperm concentrations. Well, that explains it. I was wondering, why is my sperm not so concentrated anymore? You're eating too many fruits and vegetables, jerk. Lower sperm concentrations, heart disease, that's something nobody wants, no matter who you are. Cancer, come on, no. And other disorders. Well, that's it. That's it. Farm workers who use or are exposed to pesticides are at the highest risk without even eating the stuff that they pick. According to studies, 2022 meta-analysis found workers exposed to pesticides were nearly five times as likely to have DNA damage, while a February study found children exposed at an early age showed poorer neurological development from infancy to adolescence. That explains that as well. That explains why so many people are stupid. Do you eat a lot of leafy greens, non-organic? Well, of course I do. Well, that explains why you're stupid. But it's not all bad news. Well, yes, it is. Well, what do you mean it's not all bad news? Of course it is. It's not all bad news. Avocados? Oh, these are good for you. They're called the Clean 15. We have to make a kind of a interesting phrase, a Clean 15, and it has to rhyme and everything. Here are the ones that are really good for you. Avocados, sweet corn, what corn isn't sweet? Pineapples, onions, and papayas. Those are the top of the list of the grown produce with the least amount of trace pesticides. Nearly 65% of the fruits and veggies in that grouping had no detectable pesticide residues at all, according to the report. Rounding out the Clean 15, the fruits and vegetables that are good for you, are frozen sweet peas, asparagus, honeydew melons, kiwis, cabbage, watermelons, mushrooms, mangoes, sweet potatoes, and carrots. Now, the trick here is, if you were listening carefully, these are non-organic. If you go to the supermarket and you buy the organic versions of all these things that you're supposed to eat, they're healthier for you. But who the hell can afford those things? I can't afford organic foods. The weird thing is that farmers are getting sicker than us who consume them and put them in our bodies, because they eat them too. You'd figure a farmer would be a little smarter, you know? They're the people that actually spray the pesticides and then eat what they just sprayed. I think the bottom line is there's a couple of things you can do to make it less terrible. And that's to wash your fruit and wash your vegetables or your veggies. And by the way, you stink. Wash your body too. Ugh. No one told you, but you kind of stink. Wash it. Just wash it. And I don't know what it means to wash it. Do you put in the dishwasher? How do you wash fruit? Soap, laundry detergent. What do you do? Rinse it off. Is that enough to rinse it off, or has the pesticide soaked into the skin of the fruit or vegetable? I think it's probably soaked in by now. I think we're screwed. Oh man. You know, it's interesting because when someone does an autopsy of someone who's passed away, they don't say, how did the person die? Apples. It was apples. Seriously, apples? Yes, and kale. I thought kale was good for you. He's riddled with kale. What, are you kidding me? He's riddled with kale. Give me a kale riddle. All right, the kale and lettuce go walking into a bar, and they sit at the bar, and kale says, I'd like to buy lettuce a drink. And the bartender says, wait a minute, I didn't think kale could talk. And kale says, kidding me? I've got pesticides on me. Everything about me has been changed, and now I'm able to talk because I've been chemically transformed. Anyway, it's a long joke. I don't want to get into it. Man. You see, this is really kind of upsetting because I really have tried, and I've actually lost weight by eating more fruits and veggies. So I'm now what I'm just eating pesticides. Oh my God. This is sad. I don't know what I'm going to do now. Well, at least they don't spray processed food with pesticides. You know what I'm saying? If you go into McDonald's and get one of those Big Macs, I don't think they spray them with pesticides. So maybe that's the way to go. I'm kidding. Don't do that. That's probably worse for you. I don't think there's any place to go anymore. There's no place to go. If they do studies about something that you like, you're going to find out that the studies are going to tell you that it's not good for you. There's no place to go. There's nothing to eat. I was told recently that drinking water, you have to be careful. Excuse me? Yeah, because drinking water is not up to snuff in many towns and cities. They have to fix the drinking water because it's got too much crap in it or pesticides or that POFA. And I don't know what it stands for, but it's not good for you. It's what they put in the Teflon and stuff. It's in your drinking water. So people went to spring water. Remember that? And I don't know what spring water is. I think it's some guy named Jim sitting in a bathtub naked, filling up empty plastic bottles and calling it spring water. I don't know. I have no way of knowing. But even if it is clean water and they put them in the plastic containers, you know, when you go to the store and you have the bottles of water in the plastic, they don't come in glass. They come in plastic. Especially the cheap plastic, the crinkles, really, when you pick up the water bottle, those things. That plastic leaches into the water over time. How much time? I don't know. There's no expiration dates on the bottles of spring water. Pouring it into plastic and keeping it there for a period of time, that plastic is leaching into the water. Makes sense? Yeah. The cheaper the plastic, the more plastic leaching goes on. So even water, you have to be careful. Oh my God, what happened? Wasn't it better in the old days when we didn't know shit? As a kid, on a hot day, I would go into my backyard. There'd be a hose sticking out of the spigot in the back of the house, and I'd take the hose and I'd turn on that water spigot. And I drink the water right out of the hose with my mouth right on the end of the hose. Come to think of it now, I'm amazed that I'm still alive accordingly. I was probably drinking liquid lead or iron or something, or who knows what was in that hose. I mean, God. But that's what we did because we didn't know any better. Our parents didn't say don't drink out of the hose. They didn't know either. It was so nice not to know things. The more you know, the more you realize you can't do things and that they're harmful to you. Who can live like that? Well, raise your hand. We all have to. I'm not doing organic fruits and vegetables. I refuse to play into your hands. Because someday a report will come out by the EAWOCOTCB, whatever that would stand for, that would say even the organic vegetables and fruits have large amounts of urine in them. I have no idea. How do I know that an animal didn't walk up to my strawberry when it was being grown and pee on it? How do I know that? I don't know that. I could have a whole bunch of peed on strawberries that I'm eating right now. You don't know. And what you don't know, it's probably the best for you. All right. There you have it. We're going to take a break. But first, we here at the program, what you're listening to, we're hiring right now because the show has just taken it off in its popularity. It's been unbelievable. Are you interested in working for me?
Are you looking for a career in the fast-paced world of radio and podcasting? Good news! New England Broadcasting is now hiring. That's right. You could have a chance to work with 30-year broadcasting icon Ron Van Dam on his Daily Show and all the other fine programs on New England Broadcasting. Immerse yourself in the nonstop action of a broadcasting career where every day you'll be responsible for things like warming up Ron's coffee, getting more coffee, cleaning unspeakable schmutz off microphones, semi-regular toenail and ear hair trimming, checking the dryer to see if Ron's underpants are toasty warm, helping Ron into his toasty warm underpants, telling Ron he sounds good, checking to see if Shanahan is sober enough to do some bits, reassuring Ron that you're not lying, he does sound good, unclogging the studio toilet, yes, every day, fending off Ron's fan, intermittent waxing, and taking calls from Ron's exciting guests, from that lady who wrote a book on diseases only frogs get, to the D-list celebrity who's thrilled to be the official spokesperson for the American Nasal Impaction Society. You might be wondering if you're right for the job. Qualifications include an unironic interest in radio, knowing who Ron is in the first place, a tolerance for supernatural levels of flatulence, and at least 1 year of experience in dealing with grumpy old people who talk to themselves. If that sounds like you, your future is waiting at New England Broadcasting.
James Dern joins us now. He's director of puppy program at Canine Companions. And we're talking about raising a puppy and changing a life. Thanks for being with us today, James.
Thank you so much for having me.
You have an interesting job. Everybody loves dogs. I would assume that since the pandemic, remember that thing? Since the pandemic, people have been like having love affairs with their dogs all of a sudden. And
they really have. And if they are interested in our organization and interested in socializing and training puppies, we are the place for them.
Yeah. Tell me the benefits of puppies in one's life, especially if you have a disability or anxieties and you need that extra comfort. The dogs really need to be able to fulfill that for you, right?
They really do. You know, at Canine Companions, we train dogs that provide tasks for our clients with disabilities. They can open doors with a tug or push a push plate in public, pull a manual wheelchair, even alert a person that is deaf or hard of hearing to sounds in their environment. And really, all of that work that they do starts when they are little puppies with our volunteer puppy raisers.
Now,
our volunteer puppy raisers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go on. Tell me about your volunteer puppy raisers.
Oh, well, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about our volunteer puppy raisers who provide all of the early socialization and basic training for our dogs. They take them to puppy class twice a month. They teach them a bunch of basic skills like sit or down or hear. Teaching them to walk on a loose leash is a very important skill that our puppies learn. As well as socialize them to public places so that they're confident going into grocery stores or used to going into a restaurant and sort of, you know, settling down underneath the table so that they aren't in the way.
So what we're doing here is we're saying that these dogs are available for those services for those that may need that. Are we also asking the public to raise these puppies for that purpose, or does that take special training?
We are, you know, anybody with a little bit of time and dedication to our mission can be a puppy raiser. We would love to have anybody come to our organization and raise a puppy. They can go to canine.org/raise. And get to know us and start an application there. Our puppy raisers really are the backbone of our organization. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without our amazing volunteers.
How would I know if I have the skills to be a puppy raiser?
Well, you know, we teach all of our puppy raisers just about everything they need to know. We have a robust program where we, you know, we've designed a lot of different games and interactions that our puppy raisers do with the puppies to make them confident and focused on their handler. And we provide puppy classes through our chapters that are dotted all across the United States. I think we have 56, 57 chapters across the United States where we have experienced volunteers teaching puppy classes. So those are all available to our puppy raisers.
Wow. So you kind of cover both sides. You do the training, and then you do the actual finding a home for the service dogs for that purpose?
Yeah. We, you know, and we start with breeding these puppies. Mm-hmm. We use Labradors and Golden Retrievers. Mm-hmm. We place each one of those puppies with a volunteer uh-huh. who takes them into their loving home right. and provides a healthy diet and yep. health care for the dog.
Okay.
And then they prepare them for professional training where they come in for about 6 to 9 months uh-huh. and our trainers teach them these advanced working skills that are going to provide some independence to their right. to our clients.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you the $7 million question, and I don't know why I chose that amount, but I'm sure you're asked this all the time. So you raise a dog for, you know, for this purpose, and then there's a location found where they really need your service dog that you have raised. How does one give up that relationship that they have already established with this puppy? That's the big question.
That is the question, and that seems to be the thing that people just can't imagine themselves doing. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you that seeing this dog go on, you know, providing all of this love mm-hmm. and care for this young puppy, mm-hmm. seeing them grow up and go on to change a person's life mm-hmm. is an incredibly proud moment. And we really like to celebrate the work that our mm-hmm. volunteers do. Mm-hmm. We have a ceremony when the dogs are placed with our clients. Mm-hmm. Our puppy raisers come in and they are able to hand over the leash mm-hmm. to that person. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, foster a relationship with that person and mm-hmm. see the incredible work that these dogs mm-hmm. do.
I would assume it's a lot easier to undergo that if you have other dogs as well. In other words, you're not giving up the only dog that you have, but you already have a family of dogs, so that's okay. Is that yeah. make sense?
Yeah. Of course, a lot of our volunteers have other dogs in the home. Mm-hmm. A lot of volunteers have been raising puppy after puppy as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah. they will turn in one puppy and have another on the way. Mm-hmm. And we have volunteers that have been with our organization for literally decades mm-hmm. and have raised 25, 30 puppies and just keep going. They're incredibly wow. dedicated volunteers.
Wow. James, are there certain breeds of dogs that are more conducive to this type of training than others?
Yeah, we use Labradors mm-hmm. and Golden Retrievers. Mm-hmm. We find that Labradors are really incredibly hardworking mm-hmm. and those Golden Retrievers are very emotionally connected to people. And so the cross between the two tends to be a very successful dog. Hmm. And so we love that combination of hard work and emotional connection.
Wow.
They're incredible dogs.
Okay. Are there funds available? Is it expensive to do this? Are we doing this from as a totally volunteer? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so our volunteers are incredibly generous. Uh-huh. They provide the food and the health care for our dogs. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are never going to leave anybody in a bind mm-hmm. that is raising a puppy. We're here to support all of our volunteers and clients. Mm-hmm. And so we do what we can and we get people through the process.
Yeah, because on the other side of the coin, I mean, to have a service dog when you have some type of disability, it's mm-hmm. it's everything. It's everything. So it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and our clients, we place these dogs to our clients and provide a lifetime of support mm-hmm. For the lifetime of the placement, mm-hmm. completely free of charge to our clients.
Wonderful.
A big piece of that is because of the contribution that our puppy raisers.
Beautiful. So how does one get more information and possibly get into this?
Yes, it is canine.org/raise. You can find more information there and start your application to become a volunteer puppy raiser. Please come join us.
Wonderful. One more time, that website.
canine.org/raise.
There you go. Hey, James, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate it. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.